creeping, slow, then blindingly bright. It disappears slower than I thought it might have. The warmth in her surprises Roke as well, and his fair cheeks are quick to flush. "I am not my mother," Victor announces, "or my sister. My ships are mine. My men are mine." Her wide-set eyes are cool, almost sleepy, but they flash as she leans forward now. "Trust me, and you will find reward. But all that matters is what Darrow thinks." All eyes turn to me in my silence. In truth, I was not thinking about Victor, but about Tactus, and wondering how easily he could tell that I kept him at arm's length. When I showed him love at first, and he rejected the violin, I grew embarrassed and hurt. So I pulled back. Better if I'd been true to how I felt and stayed the course. His walls would have broken. He never would have left. He could still be here. I'll not make the same mistake again, least of all to Victor. I reached out to her in the hall, and I will do so in this company. "Chance made us gold," I say. "We could have been born any other color. Chance put us in our families. But we choose our friends. Victor chose me. I chose her, like I chose all of you. And if we cannot trust our friends..." I look to Roke, plaintively, seeking absolution in his eyes. "Then what's the point in breathing?" I look back to Victor. Her eyes say a thousand things, and the jackal's words come back to me, as he lay burned on his bed from the bomb. Victor loves me. Could it really be so simple? She does all these things not for the Julii way of gain and profit, but for that simple human emotion. I wonder, could I ever love her? No. No, in another world, Mustang would never be a warrior, would never be cruel. In any world, Victor would always be this. Always a warrior. Like Io, really. Always too wild and full of fire to find peace in anything else. Mustang notices something pass between Victor and me. "Then it's settled," Mustang says. "Back to the matter at hand. Pliny waits now with the main fleet. There he has brought all of my father's bannermen to compose a document of formal surrender to the Sovereign and a restructuring of Mars. The deal, as far as I understand it, will make him the head of his own house. He, along with the Julii and the Bellona, will be the powers on Mars. Once the peace is agreed upon, it will be sealed with the execution of my father in the courtyard of our citadel in Aegea." Mustang looks around the table, letting gravity build behind her words. "If we do not rescue my father, this war is done. The Moon Lords will not come to our aid. In fact, they will send ships against us. Vespasian's forces from Neptune will turn around. We will be alone against the entire society. And we will die." "Good. That makes things simple," I say. "We take back our fleet, then we take back Mars. Any ideas?" Chapter 33. A Dance. I sleep with a dream of the past. My hand curled in the tendrils of her hair. About us, the veil lay quiet in slumber. Even the children did not yet stir. The birds rested on knotted limbs in the pinewood nearby, and I heard nothing but her breath and the crackling of the old fire. The bed smelled of her. No scent of flowers or perfume. Just the earthy musk of her skin, of the oils in her hair around my hands, of her hot breath as it warmed my cheek. Her hair was of our planet. It was wild like mine, dirty like mine, red like mine. A bird outside croons loudly, incessantly, louder, louder. And I wake and hear someone at my door. Kicking aside sweaty sheets, I sit up on the edge of the mattress. Visual! A hollow appears of Mustang in the hall. I rise up instinctively to let her in, but when I reach the door, I pause. We have our plan. There's nothing left to discuss at this hour. Nothing from which any good would come. I watch her on the hollow, shifting foot to foot, something in her hands. If I let her in, it'll just cost us both in the end. I've already hurt Roke, already killed Quinn and Tactus and Pax. Bringing her close now would be selfish. The very best. She survives this war and she learns the truth about me. I back away from the door.
Darrow, stop being an arse and let me in!
My hand chooses for me. Her hair is wet and loose, her uniform replaced by a black kimono. How fragile she seems next to Ragnar, who lurks in the hall.
Told you,
she says to Ragnar. To me, she says, you'd be awake. Ragnar here was being stubborn, said you needed to sleep, and he wouldn't take the food I brought him. Do you need something? I ask, more coldly than I intended. Her feet make a show of shuffling nervously.
I'm afraid of the dark.
She pushes past me. Ragnar watches this, eyes giving nothing away. I told you to go to bed, Ragnar. He does not move. Ragnar, if I'm not safe here, I'm not safe anywhere. Go to bed.
I sleep with my eyes open, Dominus.
Really?
Yes.
Well, do it in your bunk, Stained. That's an order. I say, hating the master's words as soon as they come from my mouth. Reluctantly, he nods his head and slips silently down the hall. I watch him go as the door hisses closed. I turn to find Mustang, inspecting my suite. It's more wood and stone than metal. The walls carved and worked with woodland scenes. Strange the efforts these people go to, in order to make themselves feel part of history, and not a piece of the future. Severo must be pissed he's not the only one lurking behind you anymore.
Severo's grown up a bit since you last saw him.
He even sleeps in beds. She laughs at that. Well, Ragnar was so adamant I go away that I thought you might have company.
You know I don't use pinks.
It's big, she says of the suite. 6 rooms for little old you. Aren't you going to offer me something to drink?
Would you...
No, thank you. She tells the room's controls to play music. Mozart. But you really don't like music, do you?
Not this sort. It's... stuffy.
Stuffy? Mozart was a rebel, a brigand of monolithic genius, a breaker of all that was stuffy.
I shrug. Maybe. But then the stuffy people got a hold of him.
You're such a hayseed sometimes. I thought that Theodora would have managed to feed you some culture. So what do you like, then?
She runs her hands along a carving of an elk leading its herd. Not that electronic madness the howlers thump their heads to, I hope.
Makes sense that the Greens came up with that. It's like listening to a robot having a seizure.
Have much experience with robots? I ask, as she moves around the victory armor in a room off to the side of the entry hall. The Sovereign gave it to the Ash Lord when he burned Rhea. Mustang's fingers play over the frost-hued metal. Father's Oranges and Greens had a few robots in their engineering labs. Ancient, rusted things that Father had refurbished and put in the museums. She laughs to herself. He used to take me back there when I wore dresses and my mother was still alive. Absolutely detested the things. I remember Mother laughing about his paranoia, especially when Aegis tried restarting one of the combat models from Eurasia. Father was convinced that robots would have overthrown man and now rule the solar system if Earth's empires had never been destroyed. I snort out a laugh.
What?
She asks. I'm just... I snicker quietly. I'm trying to imagine the great Arch-Governor Augustus having nightmares of robots. A louder bout of laughter seizes me. Does he suppose they'd want more oil, more vacation time? Mustang watches me, amused. Are you all right? I'm fine. My laughter fades. I hold my stomach. I'm fine. I can't stop grinning. Is he afraid of aliens, too? I never asked him. She taps the armor. But they're out there, you know. I stare at her. That's not in the archives. Oh, no, no. I mean, we've never found any.
But the Drake-Roddenberry equation suggests the mathematic probability is N equals R star times FP times NE times FL times FI times FC times L, where R star is the average rate of star formation in our galaxy, where FP is the fraction of those stars that have planets. You're not even listening anymore.
What do you suppose they would think of us? I ask. Of man.
I suppose they would think we're beautiful, strange, and inexplicably horrible to one another.
She points down a hall.
Is that the training room?
She flips off her slippers and walks away down a marble hall, casting a look back at me over her shoulder. I follow. Lights come mutedly to life as we pass. She slips ahead faster than I care to follow. I find her moments later in the center of the circular training room. The white mat is soft under my feet. Carvings line the wooden walls. The House of Grimace is an old one, she says, pointing to a frieze of a man in armor. You can see the Ash Lord's first ancestor there. Seneca Aug Grimace, the first Goal to touch land in the Iron Rain that took the American Eastern Seaboard, after one of Cassius's ancestors, forget his name, broke through the Atlantic fleet. Then there is Vitalia Aug Grimace, the Great Witch, right there. She turns to me. Do you even know the history of the things you try to break? It was Scipio Arbalona who defeated the Atlantic fleet.
Was it?
She asks. I've studied the history, I say, just as well as you.
But you stand apart from it, don't you?
She paces around me.
You always have. Like you're an outsider looking in. It was growing up away from all this on your parents' asteroid mine that did the trick, wasn't it? That's why you can ask a question like, what would aliens think of us?
You're just as much an outsider as I am. I've read your dissertations.
You have?
She's surprised. Believe it or not, I can read, too. I shake my head. It's like everyone forgets I only missed one question on the Institute's slang smarts test.
Ew! You missed a question?
She wrinkles her nose as she picks a practice razor from a bench.
I suppose that's why you weren't in Minerva.
How did Pax manage to get picked by House Minerva, by the way? I've always wondered. He wasn't exactly a scholar. How did Roke end up in Mars? She replies with a shrug. Each of us have hidden depths. Now, Pax wasn't as bright as Daxo is, but wisdom is found in the heart, not the head. Pax taught me that. She smiles distantly. The one grace my father gave me after my mother died was letting me visit the Telemannus estate. He kept Adrius and me apart to make assassination of his heirs more difficult. I was lucky to be near them, though if I hadn't been, maybe Pax wouldn't have been quite so loyal. Maybe he wouldn't have asked to be in Minerva. Maybe he'd be alive. Sorry. Shaking away the sadness, she looks back to me with a tight smile. What did you think of my dissertations?
Which one?
Surprise me. The Insects of Specialization. Snap! A practice razor slaps into my arm, stinging the flesh. I yelp in surprise. What the hell? Mustang stands there looking innocent, swishing the practice blade back and forth. I was making sure you were paying attention. Paying attention? I was answering your question. She shrugs. All right. Perhaps I just wanted to hit you. She lashes at me again.
I dodge.
Why? No particular reason. She swings.
I dodge.
But they say even a fool learns something once it hits him.
Don't quote.
She slashes. I twist aside. Homer. To me? Why is that dissertation your favourite? She asks coolly, swinging at me again.
The practice razor has no edge, but it is as hard as a wooden cane. I leave my feet, twisting sideways out of the way like a Lycos tumbler.
Because I dodge another. When you're on your heels, you're a liar. On your toes, you spit truth. She swings again. Now spit! She hits my kneecap. I roll away, trying to reach the other practice razors, but she keeps me from them with a flurry of swings.
Spit! I liked it!
I jump backward. Because you said specialization makes us limited, simple insects. A fact from which gold is not immune. She stops attacking and stares accusatorily, and I realize I've fallen into a trap. If you agree with that, then why do you insist on making yourself only a warrior?
It's what I am.
It's what you are?
She laughs.
You who trust Victra, a Julii, you who trusted Tactus, who let an orange give strategic recommendations, you who give command of your ship to a docker and keep an entourage of bronzies. She waves a finger at me. Don't be a hypocrite now, Darrow, our Andromedus. If you're going to tell everyone else they can choose their destiny, then you damn well better do the same.
She's too smart to lie to. That's why I'm so ill at ease around her when she asks me questions, when she probes things I can't explain. There's no explainable motivation to so many of my actions. If I am really an Andromedus who grew up in my gold parents' asteroid mining colony. My history is hollow to her. My drive confusing. If I was born a gold. This must all look like ambition, like bloodlust. And without Io, it would be.
That look, Mustang says, taking a step back from me. Where do you go when you look at me like that? The color slips from her face, retreating into her as her smile slackens. Is it Victra?
Victra? I almost laugh. No.
Then her. The girl you lost.
I say nothing. She's never pried. She's never asked about Io. Not when we shared time together after the Institute, when I was a rising lancer. Not when we rode horses at our family's estate, or walked through the gardens, a dove in the coral reefs.
I thought you must have forgotten I whispered the name of another girl, as I lay with her in the Institute's snows.
How stupid of me. How could she forget? I could not linger there inside her, forcing her to wonder, as she lay with her head on my chest, listening to my heart beat, if it didn't belong to another girl. A dead girl.
Silence isn't the answer right now, Darrow.
After a moment, she leaves me alone in the room. Sands from her feet fade. The Mozart disappears.
I chase after her, reaching her before she finds the door to the hall. I grab her wrist. She flings me off. Stop it! I reel back, startled. Why do you do this? She asks. Why do you pull me back if you're just going to push me away?
Her fists ball like she wants to strike me.
It's not fair! Do you understand that? I'm not like you. I can't just shut off like you do.
I don't shut off.
You shut me off after that speech about Victra, about the importance of friends.
She snaps her fingers in front of my face.
You can still cut me away like that. You care and then you don't. Maybe that's why he likes you so much.
He?
My father. He doesn't like me. How could he not? You are him.
I back away from her, and find rest on the edge of the bed.
I'm not like your father.
I know, she says, releasing some of her anger. That's not fair to you, but you will become him if you follow this path alone. She puts her hand on the door controls.
So ask me to stay.
How can I let her? If she gives me her heart, I'll break it. My lie is too great to build a love upon. When she discovers what I am, she will reject me. Even if she could survive that, I would not. I look at my hands as if the answer is there.
Darrow, ask me to stay.
When I look up, she is gone.
Chapter 34 Blood Brothers. Lorne's scouts capture the camel vessel as it brings foodstuffs to Pliny's fleet gathered around Hilda's station, a star-shaped hub of trade and communications on the fringes of the asteroid belt between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. For 15 hours, I hide with Roke, Victra, Severo, the Howlers, the Telemannuses, Lorne, Mustang, and Ragnar, among boxes and crates of vacuum-sealed protofiber meals. Ragnar crushed the first box he sat on, sending meals scattering everywhere, before he left the humid cargo bay for the sub-zero freezer unit. Severo cuts open a half dozen of the meals and nibbles throughout the journey, sharing with the Telemannuses and his Howlers, while Roke sits speaking with Victra in the corner. Mustang leans against Daxo, sharing stories with Kavax about Pax. She avoids my gaze. I tried apologizing before we boarded the ship, but she cut me off fast-like.
Nothing to apologize about. We're adults. Let's not sulk and bicker like children. There's things to be done.
The words grow colder as I roll them over and over again through my mind.
Lorne nudges me with his boot.
Try to be less obvious, boy. You're staring.
It's complicated.
Love and war. Same coin, different sides. I'm too wrinkled for either.
Maybe war will breathe some life into your old bones.
Well, I tried love last month.
He leans closer.
Didn't work like it used to.
Too honest, Lorne. I can't help but laugh. He grunts and adjusts himself on the boxes, groaning audibly as something pops in his back.
So that's the reason for all this. Helping poor old man Lorne get his fix of war.
His anger is not yet dissipated, nor do I expect it to.
Let me return the favour to you. The key today will be tact. The preachers, legates, and bannermen you attempt to woo are not fools, and they do not suffer fools. Pliny has given them valid argument. He's aligned their interest with his. You must counter with the same.
Pliny is a leech, I say. A liar as much as you're an honest man.
And that makes him dangerous. Liars make the best promises.
Lorne plays with his griffin ring, no doubt thinking of the beast and of the grandchildren on his ships in the fleet. He brought his whole household off Europa, 3 million men and women of all colours.
I could not leave them,
he told me when I noted the size of his fleet as we left that water moon.
Octavia would come and burn the home while we're away.
So they left their floating cities and set to the stars. The civilians will separate from my fleet soon, hiding in the infinite black space between the planets. His three surviving daughters-in-law will guide them.
And Pliny has the power of the sovereign behind him,
Lorne continues.
It will be difficult to dissuade them. Speaking of the sovereign, I noticed that you have something of hers.
The Pax?
No, smaller, though not much smaller. The Stained that was here.
Ragnar,
if that's its name,
Lorne says.
His name, I say.
He was meant to be a gift for the Julii for betraying Augustus.
Saw it in the Citadel's arena once. Scary as some of the creatures that hide in Europa's seas.
He might be an obsidian, but he's still a man.
Biologically, maybe. But he's bred for one thing. Don't forget that.
You treat your own servants kindly. I expect you to treat mine the same.
I treat people kindly. Pinks, browns, reds are people. Your Ragnar is a weapon.
He chose me. Tools don't choose.
Have it your way, but know the consequences.
Lorne shrugs and mutters something further under his breath.
Say what you want to say. You will fall to ruin because you believe that exceptions to the rule make new rules, that an evil man can shed the trappings of wickedness just because you want him to. Men do not change. That is why I killed the Wrath Boy. Learn the lesson now so you don't have to learn it with a knife in your back later. The colors exist for a reason. Reputations exist for a reason.
For the first time, he seems small and old to me. It's not his wrinkles. It's what he says. He is a relic. Thoughts like his belong to the age I'm trying to destroy. He can't help what he believes. He's not seen what I've seen. He's not come from where I've been. He had no Io to push him, no Dancer to guide him, no Mustang to give him hope. He grew up in a society where love and trust are as scarce as grass in the Helian waste. But he's always wanted both. He's like a man planting seeds, watching them grow into trees, only for his neighbors to cut them down.
It'll be different this time. And if all goes well, I will give him back a grandson.
You taught me once, Lorne. I'm a better man for it. But now it's my turn to teach you. Men can change. Sometimes they have to fall, sometimes they have to leap.
I pat his knee and gain my feet.
Before you die, you'll realize it was a mistake to kill Tactus, because you never gave him the chance to believe he was a good man.
I find Ragnar lying on the ground in the freezer unit, at home in the bitter chill. His shirt is off, so I see the frightening angles of his tattooed body. Runes everywhere. Protection over his back, malice over hands, mother over his throat, father over his feet, sister behind his ears, the mysterious skull marks have stained upon his face.
Ragnar, I say, sitting, not much for company, are you?
He shakes his head. The white ponytail curls on the floor. Eyes like stains of pitch stare at me, measuring.
Second eyes, tattoos on the backs of his eyelids, are strange. Pupils like those of a dragon or a snake, so that when he blinks, his animal soul sees into the world around.
I sit watching him, wondering how to say what I want to say. Obsidians are the most alien of the colors.
By offering me stains, you are bound to me. What does that mean to you?
It means I obey.
Unconditionally?
He does not answer.
If I asked you to kill your sister or your brother...
Are you asking me this?
It is hypothetical. He does not understand the notion when I explain it.
Why plan?
He asks.
You plan, you decide. I do, or I do not. There is no plan.
He considers his next words carefully.
Mortals who plan die 1,000 times. We who obey die but once.
What is it that you want? I ask.
He doesn't stir.
I'm speaking to you, Stained.
Want.
He chuckles.
What is want?
The derision in his voice comes from a deeper place than our godless realm. He's alien here because we grow his kind in worlds of ice and monsters and ancient gods. We get what we pay for.
You name it, so you think I know it. Want.
Don't play games with me, and I won't play games with you, Ragnar.
I wait a moment longer.
Must I repeat myself?
Gold plans, gold wants.
He rumbles slowly. Time between each sentence.
Wanting is your heartbeat. We of the All-Mother do not want. We obey.
On your knees?
And he says nothing in reply. So I continue.
You once wore shackles, Ragnar. Now the shackles don't weigh you down. So, what do you want?
He doesn't respond.
Is it petulance? Surely you want something.
You struck off the shackles of others, and seek to bind me with the shackles like your own, your wants, your dreams. I do not want.
He says it again.
I do not dream. I am stained, destined by All-Mother Death to deliver her promise.
His face shows me nothing, but I feel petulance in the man.
Did you not know?
I examine him warily.
You make yourself look dumber than you really are.
Good.
He sits up swiftly, before I even have time to move back. Bloody damn, he's fast. He takes out a knife and very quickly cuts his palm.
When I offered stains, I bound myself to you, forever, till nothing.
I know this is their way, and I know what horrors he went through to gain the title of Stained. He is not a man of half-oaths or half-measures. To be an obsidian is to know misery. To be stained is to be misery. And it is to angle themselves one way in life, to serve their golden gods, like myself, if they are so lucky. We take their strong, we leave their weak. We send violets with tech to make lightning shows on hillsides. We sow famine, then descend with food. We send plagues, then bless them with yellows to heal their sick and cure their blind. We have carvers seed monsters in their oceans, and griffins and dragons in their mountains. And when we are displeased, we destroy their cities with bombardments from orbit. We make ourselves their gods. And then we bring them into our world to serve our greedy aims. We want, they obey. How could Ragnar ever be what I need him to be? What if I wanted you to be free? He flinches back, eyes expressing a deep fear.
Freedom drowns.
Then learn to swim. I set a hand on his massive shoulder, muscles like rocks beneath his skin. One brother to the other.
We are not brothers, Sunborn,
he says, his voice wavering.
You are master. Do you not understand? I obey, you command.
I tell him he chose me for his master. I did not take him, as he thinks. And it was he, not I, who commanded the assault team that took Kellan Albalona's ship. He did that. There was no gold to guide him, no gold to make him a leader. But that alone is not enough. What would Io say to him? What would Dancer say? Our color is the same, I tell him. He doesn't understand, so I cut my finger. Red blood comes out, and I smear this on the black sigils that mark his color on his hands. Then I take his blood and smear it over the gold on the back of my hands. Brothers, all water, all flesh, all made from and bound for the dirt.
I do not understand,
he says fearfully, actually scooting back and away from me till I have cornered him like a little child.
We are not the same. You are from the sun.
I am not. I was born 6 inches from the dirt. Ragnar Valaris, I release you from my service, whether you like it or not. I will not let you be bound. I will not let you be led. You stay in this icebox till you're man enough to decide what you want. You shoot yourself in the head, you freeze yourself to death, go ahead. But whatever you do, it'll be because you chose to do it. Perhaps you'll choose to follow me. Perhaps you'll choose to kill me. Whatever it is you decide, you must decide for yourself. He stares at me, eyes wide with terror.
Why? He rumbles. Why do you shame me? In all of the worlds, no man would reject a stained. I choose to offer myself and you spit on me. What have I done?
When you offer yourself, you offer your brothers and sisters and people into slavery as well.
You do not know,
Ragnar seethes.
We live to serve. If we do not, gold will end us. We will be no more. I have seen fire rain from the sky.
Centuries ago, in the Dark Revolt, the Golds killed more than 9/10 of his color. Exterminated them like culling a population of predators. That is the only history they know. The one we give them. Fear. The history of men is kept from you, Ragnar. The Golds teach you that you have always been slaves. That obsidians exist to serve, to kill. But there was a time before gold, where man was free.
Every man,
he asks. Every man. Every woman. You were not born to serve gold.
No, he rumbles. You tempt me. You bait me. I have seen this before. I have seen false words meant to trick. The true words are known to me, to us. Our mothers teach them. Fear and serve the men of gold, or they will come with iron from the sky. Gold will treat you with fire of the sunborn, for they are not bound by love, not bound by fear, not bound to earth, but to sky and sun. Fear and serve the men of gold.
I do not serve them.
Because you are one of them.
What have I told you I was not? He stares at me. No answer. No movement, nothing. Just confusion. And so I tell him. I tell him in that freezer what Dancer told me in the penthouse. We have been deceived. I had a wife, I tell him. They took her from me. They hanged her. They made me pull her feet so that her neck would break and she would not suffer. I killed myself after that, burying her, letting them win, letting them hang me. I drowned in grief. I tell him how the sons came for me. And Ares gave me a second chance. The same chance you now have to rise. For 700 years we have been enslaved, Ragnar. Your people, my people. We have languished in darkness. But there will come a day when we walk in the light. It will not come from their mercy. It will not come by fate. It will come when brave hearts rise and choose to break the chains, to live for more. You must choose for yourself. Will you choose the hard path? Will you choose to be my friend? Will you rise with me? Or will you go as all who have gone before, never knowing what might have been? I leave after that. I do not swear him to silence. I do not demand an answer. Dancer demanded none from me. I had to make the choice. If I had not, if I had been forced into service, then I would have given up 1,000 times. Slaves do not have the bravery of free men. That is why golds lie to low reds and make them think they are brave. That is why they lie to obsidians and make them think it is an honor to serve gods. Easier than the truth. Yet it takes only one truth to bring a kingdom of lies crashing down. Ragnar must join me, because red alone will not be enough.
Chapter 35 Tea Time. Our disguise in the camel ship holds, as we approached the fleet around Hildar Station, aiming for what was once Augustus's flagship, now Pliny's. Invictus. Rip Wings flies silently past us, requesting clearance codes. Our pilot sends the codes, and we are escorted to join a procession of supply ships that funnel into the Invictus's hangar, like caravan traders lining up outside the grand gates of some desert citadel. Guns track us as we taxi. We land with a thud. The pilot pops open the aft bay doors, and I mine-hop from the ship down to the hangar's floor. Instead of greeting brown haulers like she might have expected, the orange docker looks up from her datapad to see a war party in full armored panoply, armed to the teeth. Without hesitation, she sits down, wanting no part of this. Severo laughs and pats her on the head. "Wiser than gold." A circus of ships fills the bay. Lights glow down from the high ceiling.
Oranges and reds scuttle about. Welding torches sizzle against hulls. Men and women shout at one another. My fellows follow me, walking through the hangar toward the lifts, where we can access the rest of the ship. As we walk, silence spreads like wildfire. Welding torches cease to sizzle. Men no longer call out. They simply stare. I stalk forward in the front with Lorne. Mustang and Kavax Autelemanus flank us. Roke follows with Severo and Daxo. Victra comes next with the Howlers. And then behind them all, like some sort of pale, giant shepherd, comes Ragnar. He chose to join us from the freezer. We exchange a look, and in one nod I know I have a new general for the rebellion. I swell with confidence. Not a soul protests our movement, though by our attire they know we do not come for peaceful talks. My armor is black, carved with roaring lions. A thin pulse shield flickers over it. On my left arm, my aegis activates, its opaque blue surface drinking in the light. My white razor slithers on my arm. Our boots make the sound of hail on the metal decks. I dispatch Pebble to have our green squads crash the ship's communication system. A copper sees us and makes a deal of playing with his datapad. Ragnar slips up to him, touches his shoulder hard enough to push the man to his knees. No! We enter the lift, and the guts of the ship, without a shot being fired. We take the lift to the deck one above the command level. The lift doors open, bringing us face to face with a squad of grey marines. Captain, you're to accompany Virginia Au Augustus to the engineering bay, I say to the grey. His eyes appreciate the gravity of the situation. After barely a hesitation, he salutes. His confused men fall in behind Mustang and the Telemanuses as they head off at a trot. The ship alarm begins to wail. The Howlers go to the engines and life support systems as my own force continues three decks up, heading not for the command deck, where Pliny will be hosting his new allies, but for the brig. Roke, Victra, Lorne, Severo, and Ragnar slip in through the doors, subduing the guards before I even enter. The prisoners, some 40 peerless Augustus loyalists, are imprisoned in small duroglass cells. Severo walks past each, freeing the men and women inside with a data key as he goes. "Thank the Reaper," he says to each, repeating it four times to a towering old peerless woman till she finally realizes she's not getting out till she plays his little game. They each roll their eyes and say, "Thank you." "What a good, abnormally tall and decrepit peerless you are." "Excellent," Severo says, and lets the woman out. "Lorne, I found a possible bedmate." He pauses before he comes before the jackal's glass cage. "What do I spy with my little eye?" Severo happily crows. "Wait, I have two again." "Let me out," the jackal replies flatly. "I'm not playing your game, goblin." "Thank the Reaper, and the name Severo, you know that." The jackal rolls his eyes. "Thank you, Reaper. Bow like a good servant." "No. Just let him out," Lorne grumbles. "He has to play my game," Severo says. "Shithead isn't getting out till he plays nice. I'll give him a riddle instead. What do I have in my pocket?" I grow tired of the game, so behind his back I point to my eye. "An eyeball," the jackal says. "Gory dammit, who told you?" Roke takes the key from Severo's hand and scans it over the cell's console. The jackal joins us. "Grow up, Severo," Roke mutters. "The hell is your problem?" Severo asks. "We need to take our time anyway. Can't let me have a little bit of fun?" "We take our time so Pliny can fear our actions. He must suspect the loyalty of most of the crew, but no doubt he has a contingent of bought and paid for soldiers on board. Mercenaries, most likely. He'll hide behind them like a shield.
"Where's your father?" I asked the jackal.
"I don't know," he says. "I don't believe he's on the ship. My sister make it to you safely?"
"She found us."
"Good," he says, turning quickly to acknowledge Lorne. "A pleasure, Arcus. My father forbade me from reading your exploits as a child. Still, I managed. Tales of old Stoneside kept me up late into the night."
"As did your performance at the Institute," Lorne replies, with a small smile for me. "I was afraid to close my eyes after seeing your campaign."
The jackal chuckles. "Seems your mission was a success on Europa, Darrow. They sprang the trap as we hoped, and Aja escaped. Then let's go fix this problem and get on with our war." Roke looks back and forth between us, perhaps noting the familiarity with which we speak. "Yet another thing I never told him. The gulf grows." We meet Mustang in the low-color gallery during lunch hours. Hundreds of orange deckhands and electricians mingle with the red factory workers and brown janitors. The buzz of conversation and the clatter of plastic trays on metal tables falters as soon as Ragnar enters the galley. Dead silence, except for an overexcited brown janitor who screams at the top of his lungs. His comrades quickly cover his mouth. Ragnar walks to the center of the room and moves one of the tables without waiting for the low colors to get up. Pulling it free of its metal bolts, he drags it screeching across the metal floor, low colors still sitting on the attached benches. They stay motionless, eyes huge and terrified and utterly confused at the sight of my cadre of 50 golds. The telemanisters follow Ragnar, carrying between father and son a circular metal device 1 meter thick, 2 meters in diameter. The purpose of their trip to the engineering bay. Their arms are covered by armor, but the veins of their necks bulge under its weight. Mustang guides them, looking at a datapad. "Here," she says. They drop it where she points. The Greys follow, carrying a huge battery unit, which they set on top of a nearby table.
"Alice, make some noise," I say into my comm.
"Pardon me, excuse me, sorry," Pebble says, waving her pudgy little hands. She takes a cable from the battery unit and attaches it to the disc. There's a crackle as the ship's speakers activate. "Pliny," a voice calls sweetly. I look around for Severo and see him at a terminal with two of the Greens.
"Severo!"
Mustang and I snap. He holds up a finger for us to wait. "He's on the comm," one of the Greens jabbers out sincerely. "Just a sec."
"Dear Pliny,"
Severo sings over the comm.
"If your heart beats like a drum and your legs a little wet, it's 'cause the reaper's come to collect a little debt."
He sings this 3 times until Ragnar throws a table into the console. Sparks shower out. Severo looks up slowly at the table hanging over his head. It missed by inches. He wheels around.
"What the gory piss and shit is your damage, you overreacting mountain troll?"
"Rhyming."
Ragnar makes an uncomfortable groaning sound.
"You found him," Mustang mutters as we share a look.
"Which one?" I ask, as Severo curses the stained out in every compound manner he knows, adding the crux for good measure.
"You squawk like a chicken,"
Ragnar says in reply.
"He can't insult me," Severo says aghast.
He looks at me.
"Control him!"
I wash my hands of it.
"If I may suggest continuing,"
Lorne says. "Right. Serious faces, everyone." Helmets slide from armor to cover our skulls. I see thermal readings, power levels in the digital display.
Prime it,
I tell Mustang. She activates the Leechcraft thermal drill. It's meant to burrow through the outer hull of a ship and create a breach large enough for a boarding party to pour through. So carving through the floor of a ship is nothing. And we're only one deck above the command rooms. I jump atop the drill. Momentum is everything to a helldiver, to military endeavors, to life. Keep moving and dare someone to get in your path.
You know what I said earlier?
Lorne asks me.
About tact,
I ask.
He grins evilly behind his beard. Slag tact. Terrify them.
I look at Mustang.
Burn.
She presses a button. The drill glows red. Heat radiates up into me, spreads along the floor. Low colors flow away, abandoning their food, fleeing the room as the floor sags and melts like sand pouring down an hourglass. The drill falls through the dripping deck into the command room beneath with me riding on its back. A helldiver again, if only for a moment. It slams into the middle of Augustus's great wooden table, sheaving through and impacting like a meteor into the marble floor, still melting. I cut the power cord with my razor and rise amid the smoke and steam and leaping flames as the table catches fire. 100 goals of the society stare up at me. Praetors, legates, judiciars and knights of powerful houses stand with their razors drawn. All once loyal to Augustus. All now under Pliny's thumb. Going with the wind, as they say. And there he is, at the head of the long table. His face fast paling. Beautiful, clever Pliny. One eye left, the other sporting a temporary bionic replacement. At his right sits one of the Sovereign's Furies, the Politico Moira. Compared with Azure, she's a puffy pastry of a woman. But her sweet smile is half again as sinister as her sister's razor. Beside her is an Olympic knight, the Storm Knight from the Japanese Isles of Earth.
My goodman! I bellow through the voice amplifier in my helmet. I have come for Pliny!
I jump down from the drill, helmet rippling back into my armor so they can see my face. I walk toward him. My friends follow through the hole. Arcos first, then Mustang and Severo.
You said he was dead!
Someone to my left snarls, razor half pulled.
Lorne our Arcos,
murmurs another. His name rips through the place as Severo and Roke secure the doors leading into the room.
And Kavax Autelemanos!
Kavax booms wildly as he lands. Guess Pax had to learn it somewhere.
The Reaper is not dead, Mustang says, hopping down from the drill. Nor am I. Nor is my brother. And we have come to reclaim what belongs to our father.
These peerless don't know what to do.
Liars! Pliny cries. You betrayed the Arch-Governor. Seize the traitors!
Lorne makes a simple proclamation. If anyone comes within 2 meters of Darrow, I kill everyone in this room.
They don't seem eager to call his bluff. The men I walk between jump backward. Lorne's reputation carves a hole for me, straight to Pliny. I don't break pace.
Pliny, I say, we must speak.
Kill him,
Pliny screams.
Kill the Reaper!
A young man lurches forward and dies as his neighbor stabs him in the back. The neighbor looks fearfully to Lorne.
2.3 meters, Lorne says. Close.
Kill him!
Pliny shouts futilely.
He's just a boy!
I speak quietly, but all can hear.
Pliny our Velociter, you are a traitor to Arch-Governor Nero our Augustus. You have conspired to destroy his house, to forcibly marry his daughter, to kill his son, and betray him to the sovereign who has set herself against him. Your master raised you up, and you tried to